Hello and welcome to this week's Comic Roast. I am your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX. I'm here with Brian. You can find on Twitter at Pure Rock Fury. I'm here with Chris. You can find on Twitter at SkateXEdge. And we're here with Damien. You can find on Twitter at Damien Johnston. Our number one for the week is Lake of Fire on Image by Nathan Fairbairn and Matt Smith. Nailed that. And our over-under for the week is Marvel Netflix characters. Feel like we did something similar to this before. But whatever.
But hold on. Before we go any further with that, Damien, how the fuck did you plow through fucking Luke Cage in one fucking sitting?
Oh, not one sitting, one day. I slept still, in the middle.
Dude, I'm still like, I'm only on episode 10.
Dude, I was done like 3 days ago.
I'm almost done.
Yeah, I just, I was really into it, and
don't get me wrong. That show kicks ass.
Yeah, no, I got a ton of headaches from not getting enough sleep, and yeah, that's about it.
By any chance, are you off tomorrow?
No, I work tomorrow.
Boo. I think Mike and I are going to do a podcast on it tomorrow.
On what? Man. Luke Cage?
Yeah.
Dude, what the fuck, bro?
What the fuck, bro? Dollar in the douche jar. Ew, nothing. I've been watching a lot of New Girl lately. Shut up.
Okay.
All right. So, yeah, and as always, you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/reviewandroast. You can check out all of our podcasts at comicroast.com. Other than that, I don't think I have anything.
Go to hell.
Yeah, right? Go to hell. We're done. Out. Do we have anything else?
Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now?
You want to talk about last Saturday?
Last Saturday was a grand day. The sun rose, the sun set. We all had fun. Was had by all.
What was last Saturday?
No, last Saturday was the live of the Blue Box, the live podcasting marathon were partaking in. That I want to say Brian initially opened up the dialogue with Rob Southgate about 2 years ago, give or take.
It was a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And no, actually, it was about a year, a little over a year ago.
And ever since then, we have been trying to figure out a good way, whatever, to go to the Blue Box. They do live events there a lot for Southgate Media, if anyone's familiar with them. If not, you can look them up now. So we finally went out there for the, I want to say, all told, it was 14-hour live podcast event. Holy cow. There was a lot of different podcasters there. It was super fun, actually. You know, I did really well at the one trivia that the one guy had. Chris was amazing at the trivia. Brian's pretty terrible at the trivia, but, I mean, hey.
I cleaned house, dude.
He did.
He actually did.
And he was eating a sandwich while he was doing. He's like, I'm eating my BLT, and that's like, you know.
Yeah, he's like got a mouthful of bacon, lettuce, and tomatoes. He's like, Arm Eagle! And they're like, what did he say? And they're like, he won again. And they're like, Jesus Christ, that's like the fourth time.
So yes. And basically, at this point, the trivia was they were playing songs from 80s movies, and you had to guess the song or the movie it was from.
Yeah, nobody was getting Seawolf, but this guy knew all that stuff.
It was ridiculous. Wow. I got like two of them, and Chris got like four of them.
Someone is a huge, what's that guy's name now? Roy Scheider.
Was that the guy from Jeopardy?
What?
The guy that
Roy
never
Scheider?
Lost?
Isn't he from Jaws?
Yeah, Roy Scheider from Jaws, The French Connection. Wasn't he on Seawolf?
What is he? Oh.
Yeah, you're right.
Or SeaQuest, or one of those C-80 shows on a submarine.
Was it Iron? No. Iron?
I don't know. You were like on fire, and I was just like super impressed. Because I'm like, man, this guy knows a lot of bad movies.
He wasn't even paying attention. Can you imagine if he was actually listening? Like, holy cow.
Yeah, but it just handed you the entire bag.
were there prizes?
They were 80 stuff.
They were just like, you know.
Stuff the guy's wife was making him give away. But yeah, they were giving away like Batman baseball cards with the bubblegum in it.
It's the kind from the first Batman, Michael Keaton Batman, 1989 Batman.
Wow.
Wow.
I didn't open mine.
That bubble gum.
I gave the cards to my son, and I'm like, don't eat the gum.
Right. See, they had some pins and stuff. Chris got, didn't you get like a bandana or something?
Yeah, I got like some Japanimation bandana thing. I wrapped it around my leg and, you know, went outside and did some breakdancing.
That would have been amazing.
Awesome.
Overall, though, You know, it was obviously set up by Rob Southgate and his wife Martha. They're, you know,
by Rob Zombie.
Really?
What?
Yes.
Well, I was gonna say, what time of the day were you guys there? If it's 24 hours, I'm just curious.
Well, it started at I think 7:30 in the morning and went until 9 o'clock at night or something.
Oh, okay. So was it a full 24 hours?
No. I think it was 14 all told. But we had a slot at 7:30 and 8:30, but we ended up, Brian and I got there right before maybe 5.
And we actually, like, nailed it out of the park.
Yeah, Chris got there probably like 6:30-ish.
We nailed it out of the park.
And what happened is we ended up just combining our two slots.
Hit
and
it out of the park then. Whatever.
Yeah, we did our two slots back-to-back just because, you know, we had some people, there were some people that didn't show up or some people who couldn't, you know, stay that late or whatever the case may be because, you know, people are busy. But we got to see Geeks of Go-Go do their thing. What was the one they were doing, the with the Jaws? What
oh, Binge-worthy?
Binge-worthy, yeah, I believe so. No, that was what they did on Stranger Things.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of fun, and I appreciate the fact that we were able to be a part of it, so... If you're listening, thank you for that. Any other thoughts on that? It's outside of the fact that the Blue
Honestly,
Box Cafe is amazing.
Oh, my God. I'd move into that
Not
place.
Only is it super Doctor Who themed for anybody who's into Doctor Who, but, like, their coffee was super good. Their sandwiches were super good.
The coffee I wasn't really that into, but, yeah, the sandwich I had was nothing short of amazing. Like, that was the best turkey bacon ranch sandwich I've ever had in my life.
Yeah, my sandwich was good too.
But I was just kind of like not sure what to expect. After the fact, I kind of felt like, man, I really wish we would have just kind of improvised a little more and not felt so scripted. Because everybody else felt like they were just getting up there and like, oh, we're going to talk about this. And then they just went,
I was trying to, but I think I saw you make a face or two. So I'm like, all right, I'll just shut up.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, like, I kind of just... I didn't know what we were walking into, so I was kind of like, all right, I don't want to look stupid up there. And then when I saw what everybody
was
doing,
I was trying to crack jokes.
When I saw what everybody else was doing, I'm like, oh, all right, well, I got a better idea for next time, but this time was a little stiff, I felt. But
you know, I'm not going to lie, with the atmosphere that it was in, doing something like a trivia where you can get the audience participation would have been perfect, even though they had a couple of different trivias. Maybe not so much trivia, but maybe some kind of a game show or something. Maybe we'll bring the review and roast wheel next time.
Dude, we could have like played like little samples from like metal songs and be like, all right, who is it?
Yeah, know your audience there, son.
What album is it from?
We watched one or two people.
Creator, Extreme Aggression.
We watched one or two people clear the room with their podcast, so I didn't want to follow that line.
Wrong.
Of...
Terrible Certainty.
Yeah, which Merzbow record is this? No, it's Pulse Demon, dummy.
What kind of band are they? Oh, they're a black metal band from Norway. Oh, they're known for burning churches a lot. No, they don't like God. Not whatsoever.
Definitely wrong audience for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was a fucking straight up nerd audience, but everyone was really cool, though.
Yeah, it was definitely. I think when I picked the time slots too, I was thinking, oh, prime time. This is the best time to do it. And by that time, I didn't realize 75% of the people had been there since 7:30 in the morning, and they were exhausted. And they're like, I just want to go home and shower. And I'm like, oh, dude, we picked the worst time slot in a way. I mean, it was still really fun, but like a lot of people had been there all day, and you could just tell like they were like. Nodding off and staring at her phone and like, I just want to go home. So, notes for next time.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely going to be next times. It was a lot of fun. I really hope we make a concerted effort to get back out there.
Yeah, that was a good way to kick off my fledgling stand-up comedy career, so.
Oh, yeah, you had him rolling. Oh, wait. No, you didn't.
That's what I... Yeah, next time. Next time I'm going to come with the jokes. Why the chicken
cross
the road?
I still say you could have shown the picture of Lady Killer on the thing, but hey, that's just me.
Well, I knew there were going to be a lot of little kids there, and I didn't realize the little kids were going to be basically not paying attention to anything, so.
Well, either way, what's done is done. We'll.
It was still good. I thought it was fine.
No,
it was good.
Yeah, I had a blast. Overall, though, is getting back to the norm here. I know you were, you know, we talked a little bit about it at the top of the show, but I feel like I blew through Luke Cage really fast, and it worked out really well because right as I finished it, they put season 4 of The Arrow on Netflix, so now that I can jump right back into that, which has worked out because I literally just finished it. So I'm pretty excited about that. I suppose we'll probably just wait until next week to talk about Luke Cage in detail, though, because, you know, Chris hasn't finished it. I don't know if Brian's finished it or not, but...
I'm almost done.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know how far you guys are. I know you said you were like 10 episodes in. I don't know where Brian's at, but didn't it feel like there was a couple of episodes where it would, like, the ending was so huge, you're like, dude, that could have been the end of the season. Is it short? What's going on?
With what, Luke Cage?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, pretty much.
There were just a lot of big moments. Show,
I love that show more than I like Daredevil.
I didn't know you were watching Daredevil.
I was. I didn't even finish it, but
okay.
I'm going to finish Luke Cage. I keep watching it every day, at least an episode or two.
I just love the fact that he's super corny. The whole, like, sweet Christmas thing, because I know that's part of the book or whatever, so I know people were like... Because I was reading... something online about
it. I actually like the fact that they actually do follow Luke Cage canon.
Yeah.
Pretty well. And I even love the fact that when he escaped from prison, he had his... He goes and takes clothes, and he puts them on, and I'm like, holy fuck. He looks like the fucking 80s fucking Power Man.
That was another huge thing online. People were, like, super pumped about that, which is
that
where...
That was fucking awesome, dude. Even, like, he had the fucking headband on and the fucking, like, you know, the braces on his arms. I was like, dude, that looks so awesome!
Right?
That was so fucking kick-ass. That did it right there. Like, the show was awesome, and then when I saw him, he happens to grab some clothes, and he puts them on, I'm like... Holy fuck, Davey. His outfit, his clothes that he just happens to grab makes him look like the fucking 80s Power Man. That's awesome. But if you watch, like, the credits before it starts, I didn't know, like, Jeff Loeb was, like, an executive producer and Joe Quesada and... It's like, dude.
They've been heavily involved in all the Netflix stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's plain to see. It's easy to see. Like, anyone that knows any, you know, like, that's reads comics or and has any kind of, you know, knowledge, you know, of Power Man's history, then they actually meshed it pretty well. They did a really good job. They're doing a really good job on it. That show kicks ass.
I really enjoyed it. I'm actually starting to watch it for a second time. I have some issues at the end. We can talk about that later, but I really enjoyed it, and I'm excited to watch more of it.
I agree.
Yeah, I think Netflix has got to figure out this 10 years between seasons thing when it comes to these shows now, because it's kind of a little silly. Like, yeah. they clearly have the money and the fan base to make these things more often if they want.
So you're saying they should film like 3 seasons at a time?
Flash and half of Arrow yesterday.
I haven't watched either.
Dude, I didn't know that TV, the fucking though. Shows got changed to fucking Channel 50.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, what the fuck?
This guy's swearing a lot tonight.
Yeah.
Well, obvious. I'm pissed about that.
Logan is not in the room.
Oh.
Like, we're sitting down, and I'm trying to figure out why isn't Arrow being shown? I'm like, dude, like, because I went to go see if Flash was going to be on. I'm like, oh, they have the presidential debate. I'm like, okay. Well, little did I realize that it was actually shown. It was just on Channel 50. And I was like, dude, I missed that. And then, like, yesterday, I'm like, my wife goes and tells me, oh, yeah, I heard on the news that they said that the CW moved to Channel 50. I'm like, you could have fucking told me that at 6:45 and not 7:45.
Yeah, that's it. Way to go, wife.
Get those divorce papers ready.
But, dude, fucking Wild Dog is going to be on fucking Arrow. Okay, none of you guys know who that is, then, I guess.
I'm still...
Damien, do you know who it is? If anyone knows, Damien will probably...
No, I don't, actually.
Oh, okay. He's a fucking obscure character in DC. He's basically DC's Punisher.
I like it.
But I'll send you guys a picture and a thing later on. I have one issue of Wild Dog that I got when I was, like, I think in 7th grade. It's from, like, 87. Yeah.
Well, I'm still waiting for someone to make a Strike Force Moratori show.
Well, I'm just like kind of pumped that they're actually pulling like a fucking obscure character from DC and putting him in fucking Arrow.
Well, as I say, to go back to the Netflix thing, from what I read, there's going to be three of these next year. Iron Fist is going to be March 17th. Punisher is going to be a few months later, and then Jessica Jones is next fall, and then 2018.
And they got Defenders, right?
Defenders and Daredevil season 3 will be in 2018.
Okay, so they're all picking up the pace a little bit.
Yeah, because I think there's more planned for after all this. I know there's going to be a season 2 of Luke Cage. That's pretty obvious at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the way it looks, the style, the music, everything, it's just really satisfying to watch. Because of the music that's on just about every episode, I started listening to a lot of stuff I probably wouldn't have normally discovered myself either, and there's great, great stuff out there. We could just talk about just the music that's on Luke Cage, I think, and that could be a whole podcast.
Yeah, because I was actually going to say, I'm only halfway through it, and spoiler alert, when Frank Whaley's character dies and sees episode 6 or 7...
You mean Pulp Fiction guy?
Yes.
Yeah.
The guy from Opportunity Knocks, man.
Yep, and the guy from Swimming with Sharks. And
Swing Kids.
And Swing Kids.
Still have no idea who you're talking about.
Frank Whaley.
Royale with Cheese? Is it because of the metric system?
He was Misty Knight's partner.
Yeah.
Big girl. She's a fine.
Oh my gosh, fine, she's so dope. Mama.
Yeah.
So dope.
But, hey, I was super pumped that Frank Whaley was on the show to begin with because I love Frank Whaley. But secondly, that scene where they're like panning up from him, like laying in the alley. And they kick on the stylistics. I was like, oh, dude, this is the best use. And this is an amazing song, but this is the best use of this song I've ever seen. When they're kind of just doing, like, the montage of Harlem at night and then Luke Cage walking down the street. Like, kind of like, well, we solved the crime and we saved the day. And, it seemed like if they were going for the just straight happy ending, that would be the logical end point for the season. Like, well, Frank Whaley's character died, but we got the bad guys and everything's good. Which clearly, with 7 episodes to go, that's not the case. But
well, that's what I'm saying. There were so many huge moments that could have been the end of the season. It was just
well, the thing is, it was kind of like your prototypical '80s cop show ending. Like, yeah, the bad guy got his, the other bad guys got caught by the police and are headed to jail, and Luke Cage saved the day, and now he's just walking home. Stylistics playing in the background.
Gonna go home and have some hot sex with
Rosario Dawson.
Hopefully. She's a fine mama, too.
That is me, yes. Anyway.
What?
Yeah, she's great.
She's quite attractive.
I want to say Night Nurse has now been in more Marvel properties, if you count individual episodes as different things, more than any other actor in the MCU. Because she's probably choosing, five episodes of Luke Cage, like four or five Daredevils, a couple Jessica Jones.
That'd be interesting a lot to of these tally things. Up.
I think they should do one-shot, standalone Night Nurse episodes, just randomly throughout the year.
One-shot TV shows. I like where your head is at.
Yeah, just a little one-hour, little Night Nurse thing. I think it would be great. You could do that with lesser characters. They don't want to sit here and build a whole thing around.
I like it.
She could fight Gale from Sin City. Be like,
whoa. Are we ready for the number one, do we think?
I think so.
All right. Okay, so the number one this week was Lake of Fire, number one, on Image, by Nathan Fairbairn, no one cares, and Matt Smith. This was Brian's pick, so as per usual, I will let him discuss the book that he chose.
Yes. I had zero prior knowledge or awareness of this book. I just stumbled upon it. There honestly seems to be this weird dearth of number one choices when it's my turn, which is kind of depressing. When I went to the store last Friday, I was like, wow, there's nothing here that's new. And I saw that and I was like, oh, all right. I'm, it's kind of out of my wheelhouse. Anyway, it's a bit of a sci-fi medieval mashup, kind of in the vein of the Cowboys versus Aliens type of mashup, where they take two genres and kind of smush them together. It opens up with a sheep herder in, I want to say, was it 1200 AD somewhere? I'm guessing.
I think it was like 1220.
Yeah, it was medieval times, Europe, England, and
I think it's France, but yeah.
Was it France? Yeah, yes. You're right, it is France. Okay, my bad. and this sheep herder comes outside, and this gigantic craft-looking thing is hurtling towards the mountains, and, you know, madness ensues. I'll leave it there as far as that guy goes. And then the story switches to these two young knights who are trying to join the crusade against something. I'm really going to botch this, so bear with me here. They want to join up with the King's Crusade, so they get to
the Fellowship of the Ring.
Yes, to the Fellowship. They actually look like Knights Templar, maybe Templar Knights, which maybe not entirely.
Well, you nailed it with Sauron. Crusade.
Say what?
So anyway, they try to get enlisted in this crusade. Again, I'm guessing it's during the Crusades. And they get assembled with a group of guys, and the one knight's mother sends her, I guess, boyfriend or whatever, her mate, to try and stop them. So instead he joins this party as well, and they're going to go on some 40-day excursion out into the woods for... I'm botching this horribly right now. Anyway, it turns out there's these beetle-looking creatures from outer space that are kind of wreaking havoc in the forests, and that's kind of all I got. I mean, this actually was a pretty long book for a first issue, and I mean, it kind of reminded me of Manifest Destiny, except not...
as cool.
Yeah, not as good. Like, I was into it, but I wasn't into it. I was kind of like, yeah, this is okay. I'm like, not... I'm enjoying it. Ish. I probably would have done myself a service by reading it a second time to kind of get some of the details down, but again, like, I read it kind of teetering between, like, yeah, it's not bad, and going, eh, maybe it's not that great. I don't know. But yeah, the whole time in my head, I'm going Manifest Destiny, but yeah, like you said, not as fun, not as well written, definitely not as well drawn. And I kind of, when I looked at the cover and said the single best image release of 2016 thus far, I was like, that seems like it's going to end up being super exaggerated. And after I read it, I was just like, yeah, this definitely was kind of a bit of an exaggeration. Good, not the best. The artwork was a little on the Saturday morning cartoony side for the kind of story it seems they're trying to tell. I do like the one older knight that's kind of, like, drunk and disorderly.
He rules.
He's kind of good. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I've already botched this, so somebody else please try and fill in the blanks for me, because I've done a horrible job here.
Well, I mean, I'll say, I think I'm kind of with you, where I wasn't 100% sure if I liked it or not. I enjoyed it, but I don't know if I thought it was good. And I think the reason is because I think the story is super trope-heavy as far as characters are concerned. Like, there is, like, like you said, it's after the, or during the Crusades, and so you have, like, the war-weary veteran who's a cynical, doesn't give a shit about anything, but he's really capable, and, you know, in a pinch, like, a really good leader. You have, you know, the old man who obviously was a fighter at one point, but now he's kind of softened up as he's probably a member of a court of a queen. And then you have the queen's son, or I don't know if she's a queen, but you know, whatever, this woman's son, who's sort of headstrong, but kind of incompetent, but has a good heart, is kind of a fuck up. And then you've got his best friend, who's, you know, really honorable guy. And there's, like, the wild girl in the forest, and there's the mean, creepy monk, like, kind of zealot monk. And they're all sort of put together in suddenly a siege kind of situation. It's like the movie Aliens, where you suddenly have all these characters who don't themselves necessarily get along, all have this common enemy, but they're clearly going to push at each other. I was reading it and I was like, you know, this is cool, but I'm pretty sure I know who's going to die, who's going to live at the end. It's going to be like the girl in the forest and like the honorable kid are going to be like the last two alive. And
the drunk.
There'll be a lot of like redemption that'll happen, and there'll be a lot of betrayal. And the zealot monk won't be able to help himself, and he'll do something shitty that'll make the, you know, the tough veteran guy like kill the monk, and everyone will freak out. Like, I'm seeing the story like coming at me from a million miles away, And I'm like, you know, I kind of want to read more of this because I want to see if I'm right. If I'm not, I think I would be really pleasantly surprised. But as it is right now, I feel like the story is relying so much on tropes that we've seen before. And it is like, you know, Cowboys versus Aliens, the movie Aliens, any sort of siege movie. I mean, it seems like there's always these sort of characters. A lot of zombie movies, like Walking Dead stuff, has stuff like that where you get these certain types of characters and you push them all together and you give them an external threat. And they're forced to work together, or, you know, whatever. So I feel like I've seen not this story before, but this sort of setup a million times. It's just dressed differently.
Yeah, and I kept thinking Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and I'm like, something tells me this isn't going to be as funny as Monty Python and the Holy Grail, though. So I for some reason, a couple times I thought The Seventh Seal, and then I remembered I hated that movie, so I was like, yeah, I don't know if I'm going to, like, love that either. But yeah, it was kind of like you said. It was kind of like the ragtag group of misfits, like cobbled together for some kind of obscure, not really well defined mission that probably is not going to go well.
Right, like the king initially like sends off the kid because the kid bugs the shit out of him, and the kid only has to serve for 40 days, so he just picks a point on the map that's about 20 days away, and he's like, go there and see if there's any heresy. Kind of like, get the fuck out of my hair, and sends all the people that he dislikes, like the zealot and like the shitty drunk guy who he probably just is tired of his crap, just gets them all out of his life for a month. He's like, oh, this is gonna be great, not realizing he's actually sending him into an actual situation.
Yeah I mean, if there was a hook at all for me, it was the weird beetle creatures. It's I kind of hate it when they take two disparate genres and slap them together to go, let's see what happens if we take zombies and fucking blacksmiths from 1700 England and mix them together. And just, that was terrible. Sorry.
I was also really fascinated.
Well, you know, as I was saying it, I started thinking of those movies, Tombs of the Blind Dead, and I'm like, oh wait, that's been done, never mind.
I mean, this sort of specific mashup where there's like a massive technology gap between, you know, the two kind of warring things. I mean, these little beetle things don't seem like the things that flew the ship that crashed, you know, like they seem like vermin or something. You know, they seem like bugs or, you know, rats or something to whatever flew the ship. Like, it didn't seem like they had much intelligence. They seem like animals. So I'm assuming there's more interesting aliens coming. I'm sure there's a lot of room for them to like do stuff, but I'm definitely so worried that I kind of saw the ending coming a mile away that I'm sort of, if it starts to be confirmed in more issues, I know I'm not going to keep going with it.
Yeah. Cause honestly, like I said, I go back to my thoughts that it reminded me a lot of Manifest Destiny in terms of just basic idea. But the thing that makes Manifest Destiny so good is that it follows the Lewis and Clark expedition west, and it's kind of written in this way where the characters journal entries some of the parts of the story, and it's told in this like crazy way where like people have these assumptions of what Lewis and Clark saw on their expedition, but this takes that concept and just blows it completely wide open, where they're running into giant frog monsters and minotaurs and all kinds of crazy stuff.
But they're buffalo and
yeah, and it's never played for a gag. It's taken totally. It's played straight throughout, which is just to me, it's the best concept of taking like two genres,
history and fiction.
Yeah, two genres that shouldn't go together and mixing it, and it's been completely solid from issue one, and they're on like issue 23 now, and it's never not been good.
Yeah. Wow, I've never looked at it. I looked at the
you
covers,
never did?
No, I've never opened it up before. I thought the title looked really nice.
You know,
like
the best
logo
thing about it is Lewis and Clark never seem to be that shocked of what they run into.
Yeah, they're at the point now where they're like, oh god, mosquitoes that are like 8 feet tall, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, we fought the trees.
There was something like that, too.
We fought the moss zombies like 2 months ago. Who cares?
Well, they're that Sasquatch 6-part miniseries arc is going on right now with it.
Yeah. But yeah, they've run into the moss zombies, the minotaur, the gigantic fish, and the frogs, and those weird cannibal birds, and I'm like thinking at this point, they're like, eh, whatever, Sasquatch. Pfft.
And Sacagawea's in it too, and
yeah. And I just kept thinking, I'm like, man, I like this is all right, but I could be reading Manifest Destiny instead.
Do you know if Matt Smith, the artist, I mean, clearly he's not, you know, the Doctor, Matt Smith, but is he? Is there any relation to Jeff Smith, the guy who did Bone? Because the style looks similar.
I have no idea. But now okay. I'm going to look.
I'm just wondering, because I like the art in the way that it reminded me of Bone a lot. But I thought the little monsters looked really cool in that style. But it did. It reminded me a lot of Jeff Smith. And I just thought that would be kind of a weird coincidence if there was no relation at all.
Sweet. Yeah. I think he's looking it up. So I guess personally, for me, as far as this book goes, it was... when I started reading it, I was like, oh my god, this is a double issue. I don't want to finish it. But the more I read, the better it got. You know what I mean? Like, once you said earlier, once they introduced the drunken war hero, all right, this guy's kind of awesome. And then you got the weird monk, and then they're going, what they think is they're going on a fool's errand, but they're really walking straight up into some alien danger. I was like, all right. You know, and like you said, it does feel kind of familiar. But it got better as it went on. I don't know if I'm going to keep going with it unless somebody tells me it's gotten amazing. But, I mean, I didn't hate it. It was pretty good. It was entertaining, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. I read it twice. The first time I think I liked it a little more than I liked it the second time. It's not that I didn't like it either. I guess I feel like I'm being critical of something. There's not really anything to me wrong with it, per se.
You're critical of what you think it's going to be.
Yeah, I just feel like I'm going to be let down. I'm like, oh, it's going to be... there's no way that it's telegraphed that much. Because, I mean, if that's true, I mean, that story's been told, and there's no need to tell it again. But yeah. We'll see.
All right, so I guess we can number it, starting with Captain Brian.
Yeah, I can't find anything about this Matt Smith guy, other than his artwork, which is actually pretty good. Like I said, I liked it. I'm not sure if I liked it enough to keep going, but I thought it was... well written enough to at least hold its own. I might get the second one just to see if it can pull me in a little more, but I'm gonna give it a 7. Actually, it's I appreciate the fact that it was like a double issue and it did what it did well. I just don't know if it's enough to keep me hooked for the long haul. But based on its own merits, I mean, I feel like 7 is fair.
Yeah, I'm actually pretty much right there. I was going to go with 7 myself because, you know, like I said, when I started out reading it, I was like, ugh, I don't want to read this. And then by the time I got to the end, I actually did enjoy it. So who knows? Maybe if I read it a second time, maybe I'd like it more because I'd be more, you know, into it in the beginning because I know what's coming. But I don't know. It was decent.
It did make me want to start Manifest Destiny over again, though.
See, I never read that, so I don't have that comparison that you and Chris do on this one.
Yeah, no, nor do I.
I'm going to probably go with a 5, maybe a 4.
Or 3, 2, 1, blast off.
Well, you know, if I'm going to read anything that has a mesh or a melting pot of dragons and knights and trolls and whatever, I'll just go read Saga.
Sega?
Yeah.
Because... they do it better.
I imagine this comic, a lot of the idea of it came from like the whole idea of like, you know, knights and dragons. Like, what if those dragons were actually just aliens, and that's where that
but it comes
myth
it,
came from. But
well, like Brian said, it reminds me of Manifest Destiny. But I mean, I'm surprised you didn't get any like maybe like some like saga like you know elements.
Yeah, you know, I kind of agree with you in a way. It didn't feel epic.
Yeah.
Even though like the intro kind of portrayed...
Because that first issue of Saga, that first single issue, the very number one, that first issue kicks fucking ass.
To put it bluntly.
But it does. Are you going to disagree?
I never read him in single. I bought the first trade. I finished the first 10 pages of Saga. The first trade of Saga I read in one sitting because I couldn't stop. And it was okay. The same with the second and third. So, I mean, you don't have to sell me on Saga, or I don't think anybody at this point. I think the President of the United States is probably putting it in a glass case next to the Constitution at this point, so. He's like, I'm going to do this now before Trump gets in.
Yeah, you'd actually be hard-pressed to find anyone, I think, in the free world that says Saga is bad.
My wife hated it.
Donald Trump.
Really?
She didn't like anything, though.
Who didn't?
Well, my wife. He said his wife didn't like Saga, and I was going to say, well, that's why she's not here.
That was a point of contention that finally drove us
apart. Damien goes, get out. just leave.
I don't think that's how it went.
I know that's not how it went.
Yes. Oh,
we all
yeah.
know that's not how it went.
Maybe could have. We've been in arguments over like stuff like art before.
I'm sure it's.
But yeah, no,
it was something a lot more important than that.
Probably. Sorry to interrupt. Yeah. No, but I wrote down 7.5. I thought it was super entertaining. I thought it was well put together. It's just as far as like the skill of putting it together. Like I like the art, but aside from just liking the art, one thing I really enjoyed is the word bubbles, and not just the word bubbles, but how the text actually fits in those word bubbles. If you go back and take a look at that, it's really kind of consistent and thoughtful the way they put them in there. When there's two word bubbles that sort of cross over each other, where the little like border would be of one on top of the other, the words like kind of go around that border. So they feel more separate. I don't know. I just feel like it feels well designed, like the little minutiae of the actual art, like the technical side of it, not so much the artistic side of it. I think it's really well handled. Like it's well drafted. Maybe that's the word to use.
I'd agree with that.
Yeah. So I was like, whoever the guy, Matt Smith, whoever drew it is really, I mean, whether you like it or not, it's just, he's clearly very good, like very skilled. And I think that comes through. I'm worried that the story and the art maybe don't marry exactly how they could, and like I almost wish like Mike Mignola or someone a little bit more abstract was doing the art, like harder shadows and maybe more kind of creepier people, because the people kind of have that like howdy kind of look all the time.
Yeah I agree with that too.
Yeah, but I mean, I think it has a lot of potential, but it also has a lot of potential, like I said, to disappoint me. So I'm probably going to pick up the next one just to see how it goes, but I think at the end of number two, I will decide whether or not I'm going to keep going or not.
Did you read Nameless?
No, I did not.
Okay, because that was disappointing.
Yeah, no, I've not seen that.
But the panels were really cool.
Yeah.
The paper.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great work out there, but there's a lot that goes into comic. It's hard.
I think when Brian, when we reviewed Nameless, what was that? That was like almost 2 years ago now. Shit. Year and a half ago, Brian said he gets, when he read that he got the idea of Grant Morrison sitting in his house petting his cat wearing a ballerina outfit.
I don't recall saying anything of the sort.
Yes, you did. Kind of, sort of, you did. Whatever. It doesn't matter.
All right. Okay, so we'll move on from there as it's getting a little silly. All right, so getting back to Luke Cage for a minute, unless you've been in a bubble all week, you'll notice there are some articles popping up kind of all over the place, basically calling Luke Cage racist because there aren't enough white people in the show. It's kind of silly, and I really never understood these kind of arguments, but I don't know. What do you guys think?
I think
I didn't get that vibe at all.
Well,
it didn't even occur to me.
Yeah, it didn't occur to me either. Although I will say that Luke Cage walking the streets with a hooded sweatshirt on, with the hoodie up, kind of gave me the impression it was kind of like a silent, like a soft tribute to like Trayvon Martin. And I thought if certain people see that, they're going to pounce all over this particular tidbit. Wrongly, of course, but And oddly enough, I haven't seen anything of that nature, but that I thought it was kind of like a nice gesture. But I thought if certain people see this and they go to the same place that I just did, they're going to take it the exact opposite way. I think I'm the only one that saw that.
I don't get yeah. that vibe. The only thing I thought of is like I actually thought about it today. I was like, oh, you know what? Luke Cage, all his enemies are African American.
Well, you got to figure for a show.
I actually think that that's kind of cool because most of the characters in Marvel are all Caucasian. I mean, so what's the big fucking deal, people? Jesus.
I mean, the show is set in Harlem.
What? Yeah. That was my thought.
It's not like it's set in, like...
Weird if there's lots of white people. Like, you would definitely notice that.
Right, yeah. It's just... I know I read a couple of things where, like, oh, why is the only white people got to be corrupt police? Well, I feel like it wasn't.
There was one.
Cottonmouth is pretty fucking corrupt. Cottonmouth's fucking cousin is pretty fucked up, too.
You know what? Just kind of to get off track a little bit, just for a minute, I do want to point out the fact that, like, with Jessica Jones, the whole, like, the main the villain's biggest issue was, she doesn't like me. Meh. And in Luke Cage, he's like, Dad liked you better. Meh. Like, I think these villains need some better reasoning behind some of the shit they're doing. Okay, we can go back. It just bugs me when you have these amazing shows, but the whole thing is based on Dad liked you better.
Right. It was weird. I mean, I guess it goes to someone being insane, and that's what makes them a villain, as opposed to someone, like, wanting to, you know, wanting money or hating people with superpowers or whatever, like, other motivations have been, which I guess are also maybe a form of insanity. It's just more, this is more of a personal form of insanity on right. a smaller scale.
Well, I feel the same way with Jessica Jones, with, well, she doesn't like me, so meh, I'm going to kill everybody.
I'm going to tell Mom.
Right. Whatever. That's just me being me, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's valid.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it, because Brian's looking at me like I'm an idiot right now.
No, I didn't get that as, like, the primary motivation of Cottonmouth was deadly.
No, I'm not talking about Cottonmouth.
Talking about Diamondback.
Yeah, you'll get there.
Oh. Yeah, okay.
I forgot you haven't seen
never
it.
Mind.
No, it's fine. I don't care.
Because I'm already there. I already saw that. That was it.
I like you were saying, like, if they would have populated even the more, like, gentrified parts of Harlem with just a ton of white people, the show would have felt inauthentic, like, all the way through and through. So, I mean, realistically, this story is about, you know, it's just one piece of the, what they're calling, I forget what they're calling it, like, the Marvel, like, I don't know if this is the word what they're using, but I thought they said something like Marvel Street Universe, i.e., Jessica Jones, Daredevil, The Defenders, Luke Cage, all the
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, I heard that too.
Because it was something like, you know, like the Avengers, they're fighting global threats, whereas these guys are basically just keeping the neighborhood safe. And then they come together. So the story has to gestate from its origin point. Therefore, you know, you can't just throw a bunch of white people into Luke Cage to satisfy this kind of quasi-ridiculous idea of diversity. I think that people are literally just...
They're grasping at straws here.
Yeah, my friend Tom, he was telling me, we actually argued about it a little bit, because he doesn't think, he was like, I bet there's like maybe a couple dozen people who think that. And I was like, I don't know, man. Like, people are pretty terrible. Like, you ever read YouTube comments or just go on Twitter a little bit? And he's like, I think this is just one of those articles that's making a mountain out of a molehill kind of thing. And I was like, I don't, maybe. I mean, you know, 42% of the population is going to vote for, or of the voting population is going to vote for Donald Trump. It's like,
they probably all would agree that there's not enough white people in Luke Cage.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I actually, because this actually came up, you know, separately from this, I actually, like, did the math the other day. See if I can pop it up real quick. Because it was, you know, it was pretty weird to think of. Because he was saying, like, he said, like, a couple dozen or something like that. And I was like, I don't think that's true. And he's like, well, you know, a lot of times, you know, they'll do, like, multiple accounts to make themselves seem bigger. And I was like, I don't know, man. Like, follow one of those tweets. And then not even the tweet itself. Read the comments, the replies to the tweet. I mean, maybe they're just trolling people. But that doesn't matter. I mean, I can't possibly know what that is, but what I can know is how you present yourself online. But yeah, I looked at, like, the voting population, I think, is when people say, like, 42% are going to be voting for Trump, that's of the people who are voting, which is approximately like 25 million people. So about 60 million people, when all said and done at the end of this election, are going to definitely vote for Trump. That's if he even loses. 60 million Americans. That's a lot. Say that only a couple dozen people would be upset there were very few white people in Luke Cage, when race seems to be one of their bigger motivations for, like, getting together and rallying behind this guy. It seems silly to think that there's only, you know, such a small percentage who maybe would care and vocalize it. But I mean, that's I feel like
Asian
I
people
shit all day.
in Luke Cage. So
yeah, there were white people. There's, yeah. I think it was for being Harlem. I mean, I think it was very well represented. I've been there a couple times. It's, you know, it's not. It is a place where being white kind of makes you stand out a little bit. So if there was a ton of white people in Harlem in the show, you'd be like, well, this is weird to me.
Yeah, and I mean,
if I went to Harlem now and I saw a bunch of white people, I'd be like, dude, is there something wrong?
Well, there's a lot more now. My boss's son lives there, actually.
Oh,
he just moved up there, and it's, you know, it is really gentrified. So, and it's another area where it's expensive to live in Brooklyn now, where it used to not be. So now people are being pushed out of that borough and into Harlem and, you know, deeper into Queens, where it's like just the suburbs. So yeah, it's happening. But I mean, but still, Harlem definitely. I think Luke Cage is very well. I think it represented very well. And man, the show's cool.
Right?
Yeah.
No, I actually did follow some of the Twitter threads, and I was kind of appalled by, like, man, there's a lot of people upset about this. Like, granted, there's a lot of people upset about a lot of things, but way more people upset about this that just following a handful of tweets going down, like, well, why is it like this? Why can't this be? And I'm just like, why are you even wasting your time? I don't know. I agree. I think when you say 42% of the voting population, there's a lot more. Maybe not in the millions, but definitely I would say in the thousands. I mean, it's in the last like month or two, I'm finding out that it's not even like people our age and older. There's a lot of millennials, and I hate that word, but I was listening to, like I said, I brought up that before, the Rubin Report. I listened to that podcast quite a bit, and he did a week where he interviewed people that are like YouTube famous, and he interviewed this trans woman, Blair White, from California. And I was like, okay, she's going to talk. And it kind of breaks down what the topics will be. Like, they're going to talk about transgender issues, Black Lives Matter, so on and so forth. So I'm like, okay, I'll listen to it. And I was kind of like, wow, this girl is really kind of harsh. So I was like, all day, I'm like, you know, trying to, like, get a better, well-rounded picture of who she is. And, like, you see these pictures of her, and she looks like this 22-year-old woman. She's really pretty, and she's really... She looks really, like, sweet and nice. But then I went home that night, and I started watching her YouTube channel. I was like, holy, she is, like, borderline super racist and really just snarky and aggressive. And I was like, okay. And then there's another girl. She's on the Blaze now. She's, like, 23. And people have been calling her KKK Barbie because she doesn't really do news. She just does these 3-minute clips where she like rants about a topic, and she comes at it from a super hard right position. And I'm finding there's a lot of these young people who are really just taking a solid like black and white stance on a lot of things, and there's no room for analysis or growth of any kind. So I don't know. I agree with you. I think there's a lot more people that are getting way too upset over stuff like this than we would like to believe.
Yeah, I do kind of wonder where that comes from. I mean, maybe it's growing up in a world where these kids have been told over and over again, like, we're all equal, everyone's equal. And then when they start feeling like maybe they start when they start coming to reality of what's going on in the world, they start realizing that they're not equal, and they start maybe this is like a reaction to what would maybe have been more like white guilt for our generation. Maybe it's this sort of like an anger reaction to it. I don't know. I mean, I'm getting way off the rails, and becoming an armchair psychiatrist, so I should stop. but I don't understand it, because I do notice it a lot more often in millennials and like young atheists, because I follow a lot of atheist stuff just because I care, I like that stuff. But a huge percentage of like atheist guys are like kind of alt-right dudes, like kind of pretty sexist, pretty racist, like dicks. And I don't understand where that comes from. I mean, it's completely backwards from my, you know, worldview of what I think morality and being a good human being means. it seems like there's just a bunch of people who've decided that, like, being a troll is an important thing to do, and you should be one.
Yeah.
The girl, this girl I work with, I keep forgetting how young people are sometimes, but she's like 22 years old. And I, you know, to me, I'm like, I'm 25 still, sort of. Just, my body's just getting older. Like, nothing has changed inside my brain, but everything else is just falling apart. So I don't feel much older. Like, I don't feel like I'm aging well. Like, I don't feel like my brain is catching up with my body at all.
I'm right there with you.
I still feel like a kid. Yeah, so when she's talking about her boyfriend, she's like, oh, my boyfriend really loves that Milo guy. And I was, yeah, you know, and I was like, really? And she's like, yeah, well, he thinks it's really great that he's, like, trolling people. I go, you know, he's, like, a huge dickhead, right? And she's like, oh, yeah, no. And I go, you know, he's, like, racist and... You know, he's like, well, maybe he's not. Maybe. And I was like, well, then that's where I said the thing where I was like, you know, it doesn't really matter what you actually believe, but it's how you're presenting yourself and who you're empowering and who you're enabling. And he's enabling the worst parts of our society and giving them, you know, putting a pretty frame around them so we can now consider them some sort of legitimate form of protest, you know, which I think is ridiculous.
Yeah. Blair White's kind of stepping into that footprint as well. She did a video on fat shaming, where she pretty much said that that's the proper response. And one of the things she's like, now don't get me wrong. She's like, I love fat women. She's like, they make me look amazing. And I was just like, wow. Like, you're not even like
shit.
You're not even sliding into that. You're like jumping in, like, hello, I'm here, and I hate everybody. I was like, all right. But I feel like those are the people that are upset about Luke Cage. That didn't watch the show, would never watch it, but are just, you know, selectively upset because they're like, oh, here's the next target. Nailed it.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just looking up this Blair White lady.
She's not great.
She seems like kind of a monster person.
Oh, she's seriously a monster. But if you just saw...
I think I've heard of her.
If you saw a picture of her, you'd be like, wow, she looks really nice. Like, she's the kind of girl that you would want to, like, have a conversation with and, you know... Maybe go get a coffee with her, and then you'd listen to her for 5 minutes. You're like, oh, my God, if she lives in my county, I'm leaving. I'm running away from a 22-year-old woman.
As you should.
As I should.
Now, I find the more I talk to people, or I shouldn't say talk, the more I listen to people, the more I realize that I am not part of the majority in my thinking. Most people I find are pretty
stupid.
Terrible. Sexist, racist, you name it. Whatever ist you can find, I feel like most people are just so out of touch that I just, to the point where, like, I don't want to talk to people anymore. Like, I don't make a concerted effort to chit-chat with strangers because it's just, it's going to end up bad. Maybe it's just the area that we're in, but I feel like, you know.
Dude, I haven't wanted to talk to people for the last 20 years.
Yeah, I know, but you're super old, so I'm still like, in my 30s, so.
You're like 38.
Shh. I'm not going to get any older.
Keep telling
yourself.
Don't
do it. It's not worth it.
I know, right? I'm done,
son. Nothing at the end of that road.
I feel like I should be retired at this point. Been working since I was like 12.
Stay young as long as you can.
Actually, younger than that, whenever the hell we got our paper routes. I remember one time I had 3 paper routes at once. Ride my bike all around the city, delivering stupid newspapers, just so I can go buy magic tricks at Izzy Rizzy's. And baseball cards. Oh, youth. Alright, so I guess we're about done with that, because Brian's drawing on my laptop, so that's pretty dope. So we'll slide right into Over Under, which this week is Netflix Marvel characters.
Great, because there's like how many? 3?
No, we didn't say main characters. We said characters. So anybody in the show. So I'm going to go super unpopular decision right off the start and say overrated. I know I've said this before and I'm sticking to my guns. Wilson Fisk is super overrated. I know everyone thinks he's this fantastic, the greatest actor that ever walked the plane. He's an actor's actor. He's just not always convincing. Sometimes he is, sometimes he isn't. He's not the greatest. Sorry.
I absolutely 100% disagree with you.
I know. We've had this conversation before.
I know. I just wanted to throw that back out there one last time.
Sorry. There's certain scenes, like when he's bashing that guy's head in the SUV door. that was amazing. But there's other times where he's just like trying to be tough or trying to be whatever, and it's not coming through.
I was a little on the fence about it until they did that episode where they showed him as a kid with his abusive father.
Right.
And then it kind of coagulated in my head a lot better. And then the whole where he's kind of always just tense and kind of just a little, I don't even know how to explain it, because it's going to sound like I'm saying he's slow. He's not slow at all. He's just
methodical.
There's a good word.
Because like I said, sometimes he pulls it off. It doesn't always come through to me. And I know it. I feel like I'm the only one, because everyone tells me that they disagree, but I think he's overrated.
I like him.
Well, I don't hate him. I just don't think he's the greatest thing since sliced bread. You know what I mean?
Definitely. Right. I mean, the Marvel Netflix world is pretty darn good, and so this is a hard one. So like we said before, it doesn't mean you dislike someone when you say they're maybe overrated. It's right. Just maybe they don't live up to what you hear everyone else saying.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely a couple of, you know, choices from Luke Cage even, but I can't exactly say they're overrated if no one's saying that they're super awesome. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
So it was kind of tough, but this, I feel like that one for me was easy because I've rambled about it before.
All right. My overrated is Trish Walker, the talk show host who is, I guess, Jessica Jones's stepsister or whatever. The girl who lives in the penthouse.
Right.
Right.
I feel like
had a scene in Luke Cage.
Yes. I just feel like,
I didn't even catch that.
She served the story in some ways, but I felt like there was a lot of focus put on her at a certain point in Jessica Jones, which kind of dragged the show down a little bit for me. And her cop aggressor / boyfriend / aggressor, I just hated that guy. Like he looked like they pulled him right out of Miami Vice and just dumped him in the Marvel universe. And I tried to like him, and there were things about him that were interesting that definitely served the show. But like I never, and it wasn't like, oh, I don't like this character, he's not this, that, or the other. It was, I don't like this actor right now, and maybe in 5 years he'll be in a movie and I'll be like, he was amazing. It's happened before, but at this point I was just not. Every time he was on screen, I'm like, ah. This guy again with the mouth and the face. Next.
Face. Ugh.
I know. But like, I just felt like she was a distraction from the story at times. And she was like a little bit too, she was like, she was like Poochie the dog. It was like, she was there. Definitely there, but not really necessary in my eyes.
I never read the Jessica Jones comics, but I was under the impression from what I read that she was probably a bigger part of the comics and therefore like kind of an important part of the canon. But it does seem like maybe they didn't write her as well as they could have. Because she was actually my pick, so I'm struggling in my brain right now to pick another one.
Ah, dude, for real?
Yeah.
Did all three of you pick the same person?
I have some other thoughts. Yeah, I guess we picked the same person, so I'll just piggyback on it. Because I liked her, but I just felt like she was...
I don't. I thought she was an annoying bitch.
All right, that's a little
much. Yeah, I thought she played a good... I mean, I thought it was a good... I thought it was important for Jessica Jones' character to have that kind of, you know,
someone to ground her.
Yeah, exactly. Because then she's like... Without the contrast, it's like...
Her attitude kind of stinks.
For her to be like... I mean, there's plenty of people who are like Jessica Jones who aren't from a fucked up past, who are just, that's how they are. But when you compare, like, Jessica Jones came from the same place this girl came from, that's what gives you the comparison of what Jessica Jones is like now and why that is concerned to people around her who care about her.
Right.
So without that, you wouldn't know, you know, that she was fucked up. You'd just be like, she's just a mean person or whatever. But that said, like, I feel like she was just, because she was canon and because she was used for that, she wasn't written very well. Or at least she wasn't utilized as well as she could have been. I feel like they maybe there was even stuff that was written but ended up getting edited out, because that happens a lot too. You know, we don't have the foreknowledge of everything that was written for these characters, so it could have been a bigger story, but it felt a little bit like a detour with the cop boyfriend thing. Like, it was just, to me, it was kind of like this, oh my god, we're just pushing back this Kilgrave fight like another few episodes. As much as I really enjoy Jessica Jones throughout, I felt like there was some weird choices taken when they kind of focused on the Trish stuff. So
I thought her ass would have calmed down once Power Man gave her some of the business, but apparently it didn't do much.
No. I mean, she can never go back now, but, you know.
Well, I thought once she got some dick, maybe she wouldn't be such a cold-hearted bitch.
Wow.
Yeah, that's ever worked.
Well, I don't know. I actually don't like her. I think, you know, honestly, why I don't like her is because I felt like the
Don't like who?
Jessica Jones is because I felt like the actor portraying her was like trying too hard at doing whatever she was. I don't know. I just to me, her playing her felt kind of forced.
The Kristen, we're talking about Kristen Ritter.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's clear I was talking about Trish Walker, right?
Yes.
Okay.
We were all on the same page.
I wasn't sure.
No, we were all.
That's why I picked her character as being overrated.
So yours is Jessica Jones.
Yeah.
Okay, I wasn't sure we segued into yours. I thought you were just piggybacking off of mine and be like, and another thing.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, I'm picking Jessica Jones as overrated. I don't know much about Jessica Jones' background other than the fact that she's married to Luke Cage, but I watched a couple episodes of it. I didn't like it. I felt that, like, the whole hard-nosed, you know, missing person, whatever you call it. She wasn't a detective, but she looked for missing people. But, you know, like that typical gritty New York, you know, I drink all day. And this is, like, so atypical.
It's funny because I can take that same, all those same, the same thing you're saying and just be in a different tone and be like, and then, you know, she drinks all day and she's like this detective. Like, I can say from the same exact thing and be excited about it because I only disagree because I really like the actress. First of all, I can.
Well, you can like. Yeah. No, I don't I don't think she's a bad actress. I just.
No. I didn't think that's what you're saying either. It's just funny because it is. It does just come down to like taste, like what you like and what you don't like. Because all those things, I totally agree with you. But to me, those things are cool. I wish they had used her more as a detective in the show. I wish you got to see more of that, like earlier on. More cases or something would be kind of cool. Right. It was definitely the one Netflix show out of all of them that I don't feel had the strength of being episodic as much. Like, I didn't feel like this episode was... Like, I felt like Luke Cage and all of the first season of Daredevil and the first half of the second season of Daredevil, to me, all seemed very episodic. Like, each episode, you could put down the... You know, you could turn it off and walk away for a few days and, like, think about everything you saw in that one episode. Whereas Jessica Jones, I felt like it was really just one 13-hour long episode that had an end point for every episode, but it was kind of, it ended when the clock ran out, not like when the story had like a climax, a miniature, you know, episodic climax, a little denouement or something. There was nothing, I didn't get that from it. It just felt like one long continuous story. And I feel like Jessica Jones could have, that was a bit of a weakness for the show for me. I wish the episodes could have been more standalone and then also had the arc. Sorry, Chris, I completely hijacked what you're saying.
No, I don't care. It's fine because I'm playing Forza anyways.
It's just, that's something I've wanted to say, and I hadn't had a chance to work
it
into anything.
Dude. I don't care. No, but, I mean, like I said, that's... Not trying to just, you know, say that she's a terrible actress. I don't know.
Yeah, character doesn't really.
I understand the Jessica Jones character. I know what she's about. And I guess from that point, did she play her well? Then, yeah, I guess. But it seemed to me like it seemed a little forced and it seemed almost too predictable. Like, okay, yeah. I've been there, I've seen this kind of like, you know, hard nosed detective living in the city, drinking all night, lives all alone. You know, does their job and does it well, and I just, you know, that's been done before. I mean,
no, I see what you're saying.
Isn't Dick Tracy like that pretty much?
Never read it, so not sure.
No, but isn't he like that? He's a loner, you know, and he.
I mean, Dick Tracy's like kind of Warhol-esque pop art, in more than it is. I mean, those. From pre-Warhol days,
but they still share some same attributes. Am I not correct?
I don't know. I mean, from what I remember from Dick Tracy himself almost has no personality. It's more of like he's like I'm gonna get the bad guy kind of guy, and then the bad guys are super interesting and weird, have funny names and crazy designs, and it's like, oh, here comes Dick Tracy, that guy in yellow who seems to win for some reason every day. Like,
meh.
Yeah.
Meh.
So, but I mean, I know what you're saying. It is like the hard-boiled detective thing, and sure, you've seen it a million times. I mean,
right.
I don't know. It never gets old for me, truthfully.
The hard-boiled detective thing?
No, yeah. Not at all.
I did find the Carrie Ann Moss kissing scenes to be quite interesting, though.
Yeah, she's going to be in a bunch more MCU, so you may get more of those.
That'd be cool.
Just to go on just for 1 second, I think Kilgrave is one of the better, like, legitimately scary villains that I'd seen in a while.
Well, I'm a big fan from the Doctor Who.
Yeah, you know what? Truthfully, my favorite thing about Kilgrave was when they got him in that containment unit and then brought his parents in. It kind of just opened him up emotionally in a way that I didn't expect. And I kind of... Mm-hmm. It just fully fleshed out that character in such a satisfying way that the way his story ended was so disappointing after that for me.
Oh, his actual ending.
Yeah, because I mean, he was already interesting, but he was interesting because of his abilities, but then when they brought his parents in, it just completely ripped him open in this totally different way that I didn't really anticipate, more so than they did with Wilson Fisk, and then he just became like 10 times more interesting from that point.
Yeah, when he was, like, sort of good for a while, I thought that was really fascinating, too.
Yeah, he kinda,
like, tried out being good for a while. I was like, this is interesting, because he really doesn't, like, you know, people say, like, someone's insane because they don't know right from wrong. Like, he really doesn't understand right and wrong.
Yeah, because, I mean, it totally flipped the whole, everyone's the hero of their own story. And it's like, no, now he's going to be the hero of the story. But, like, then, you know, that just didn't suit him very well. So he's like, nah, you know what? I think I'm going to go back to doing what I usually do. Dropping people off of buildings. Boom.
Bibbidi bobbidi boo.
All right, so go on.
Hold on. I do, now that we are starting to talk about all this, I am starting to see that maybe I'm kind of already getting annoyed with Diamondback as well. And I actually can't wait for Luke Cage to drop that fucker.
Maybe he will. Maybe.
Well, because the whole I don't give a shit and I don't care about anybody is kind of getting like.
Well, once you guys have all finished it,
played out.
Yeah, once you guys have all finished it, let's talk about it because I have some comments about the end of Luke Cage, and I will say that I really enjoyed it, but I have some comments at the end. And it revolves around that, so we can talk about that when you're all finished.
All right.
Go on. So, underrated. This one might be underrated, might not. In my opinion, it is, only because the four people I know that have watched Luke Cage, no one's really talked about him. I have been a fan of this guy since I first saw him. He was amazing on House of Cards, and the guy who plays Cornell Stokes, a.k.a. Cottonmouth...
that was
Marshala Ali. That dude rules. I don't care what, and like when, because even in like Luke Cage, there's scenes where like you nail his ass to the fucking wall, and he's just like, "Well, guess what?" And then he says some sly shit, and he just starts laughing. And you're like, "That dude's fucking crazy." I love it. Like that dude kills that role.
I like the fact that he does care about some things, but then there's times when he doesn't give a fuck.
Yeah, that dude is like, I don't know if anyone watches House of Cards, but he plays Remy Denton on there, and he's amazing on that show, too.
Okay, first of all...
He was great.
Oh, sorry. My was super loud, so let's just get that out of the way. Second of all, yes, that guy is officially on my radar now, because I do remember him as Remy Denton now, but it's been a while since I watched House of Cards, but he did kind of give that impression, like, back against the wall... He'll say some cold-blooded thing and then, like, moonwalk away, and you're like, oh, dude, I got nothing.
Yeah, he's just smooth.
Like, it's...
And
it's
moonwalk away.
It's just one of the... No, but it's super easy for, like, any series to make the antagonist, like, this crazy, loud, screaming, blah, you know, kind of amplified persona, whereas this guy... The volume level from when he's normal to when he's like furious is microscopic almost. It's all in the eyes.
Yes.
And that's why he's so good.
Yeah.
Like, he's just got that look on his face. Like, the eyes are, like, crazy. But then when he's mad, the eyes are, like, hellfire. And that's, you're like, yeah, this guy's going to... He's about to shoot somebody in the face or strangle somebody or, in one instance, toss someone off a roof into a car.
Well, and that's what I'm...
Yeah,
like,
he's great. He's so good.
Yeah, because when you mentioned earlier... about how you thought that Kilgrave was like the legit scariest, you know, quote unquote villain in Marvel. I'm like, dude, I don't know. Cottonmouth can kind of run with give him a run.
Yeah,
for his money.
I guess what I should have been more clear. I think Kilgrave's power is one of the most legit scary powers.
Absolutely.
Maybe not so much the character itself. Although I thought he was great and David Tennant was fantastic, but that power is horrifying.
I was actually worried.
I'll give you that. Cottonmouth is a little bit more unpredictable.
Yeah,
way more unpredictable because there are times where he kind of shows like he cares, like when his like flunky went and killed Pops.
Spoiler alert.
that happens pretty early on.
Yeah, I'm past that part.
It's like second episode, but still.
But yeah, he does.
He fucking takes care of that dude.
Yeah. No, he's cool, man. He's complicated, which is great. He doesn't have that.
But
one thought,
yeah. But when they show how his childhood was, his nuttiness is actually, what's the word I'm looking for? Validated.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, he's actually
like I could see it. Okay, like I get it. Like, dude, your childhood was fucked up, so I understand why you're kind of messed up in the head. You saw some shit that someone your age shouldn't have seen.
Yeah, there's the little musical things he plays a couple of times in the show, like when he's just playing piano or organ or whatever. It's so beautiful. Like when that soundtrack comes out, I think I tweeted this to somebody like at Marvel. Like, please, I know you'll never look at this, but you should do a soundtrack and you should just do a 7-inch of just the little pieces that Cottonmouth plays because they're so beautiful. And I could listen to those things all the time. There's that one scene where there's like two girls in his office. He's just sitting at the organ.
Oh yeah.
He just kind of plays
bra
like a little
underwear, and
he just like plays like a minute and a half on the organ, and it's just gorgeous. It's just this beautiful piece. I was like, man, that's so good. Like, what a cool character. So then it's like, you know, it gives that character something of value that they add to the world as well, which you don't often get with villains. A lot of times, villains like, you know, if a villain was to die, there's always that like if Wilson Fisk died, there's very little that you would. It would matter. Like, it'd be like, oh, thank God that guy's dead. I mean, it would matter, but it would matter because it would be good that he would be gone because he's such a terrible person. He doesn't bring anything to the table. But when, you know, when a villain has, like, you know, there's a lot of times they'll have a villain will care for someone and they're, you know, well, I guess Wilson Fisk has his, you know, has his girlfriend now who's he's caring for or whatever. But, you know, Cottonmouth actually is an artist, like a legitimate talent. And there's that kind of tragedy to that character of being such a horrible person that they also can do something so beautiful, which is, you know, I like when that little character attribute is added to people. It makes them more complicated. It makes it harder to dislike the person because you're just like, man, it's like, it's just some bad decisions that got you to where you are. I mean, who you are.
Yeah. And I like that they touched on that too, when they went to flashbacks when he was a kid and he was, you know, practicing the piano and there was that whole, kind of
first incident.
Well, I don't
think he actually even asked for that life.
Right, it was
if he had a choice, he wouldn't have picked it. If he had a choice, you know he wouldn't have picked it.
Right. That's another thing
He gives that clue off in one of the episodes, like, you know.
Yeah. So, yeah, you know, dude, Cottonmouth, great. I mean, great choice, great character.
So yeah, I was going to say, like, one of my favorite parts thus far was at Pops' service, where he gets up and gives his speech, and then Luke Cage gets up and gives his speech, and because they are the polar opposite, they are clearly the two, you know, hero and villain characters of this show. You're not going to see an Avengers movie where Captain America gets up to do a eulogy, and then all of a sudden, like, Dr. Doom shows up and goes, "Well, let me tell you how I feel." Like, that would never happen. Like, so this makes it way more intimate, and I like that's. I mean, as much as I like the big Avengers movies, I like these small, like, more, you know, neighborhood type stories where it's like everybody knows each other, not because, oh, that's Iron Man, that's Spider-Man, it's because, oh, that guy lives on the next block, his kid went to my school. And I like the idea of there being a real world set inside the larger Marvel universe. It works like it works like a really good symphony.
Mm-hmm. I gotta say, this being the third like Streets one, they do a really good job of referencing the world they live in, like being a world where like Iron Man exists and Thor exists and Hulk exists. Like, I think they do a really good job of kind of, you know, acknowledging that like Sokovia happened and that robots, you know, and then the aliens came out of the sky, but there's still people like selling guns, buying drugs, and getting their hearts broken. Like, there's still like the world still goes on. Like, nothing really changes. It's just the danger gets different and greater.
It essentially is like, you know, the Dr. Dooms of the world aren't that concerned with your neighborhood because you're relatively insignificant, but there are these other bad people that do, because this is like their small piece of turf, and then there's got to be a guy or a girl or whoever to come in and kind of be the opposing force. So into it. Anyway,
into it. Yeah,
my underrated, I hope no one else picked it, I have an alternate just in case, is James Wesley.
Elaborate.
That would be the guy played by Toby Leonard Moore in the first season of Daredevil. He's like Wilson Fisk's PR guy almost.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Awesome.
And what I love about that guy, aside from the fact that he is just so cold-blooded, is he's got no backstory that we are aware of. He has no messed up childhood, no incident that happened when he was a teenager. He just is this blank slate, comes out of nowhere. He is laser focused on making sure Wilson Fisk's objectives are met and nothing more. And that guy was the most fascinating character in that first season. And I wanted so much more of that guy. I wanted his own show. Like, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie Les Samurai.
Mm-mm.
It's a French film. It's about this lone assassin who, I mean, he wears a tuxedo everywhere and a top hat, and he lives in this one-room apartment, and he just sips coffee, and he has a cane, and he's very much, like, straightforward. He doesn't have, a group of friends that he hangs out with. He doesn't have, like, oh, this is how I behave at work, this is how I behave when I'm with my friends, this is how I behave when I'm at the gym. Or he's pretty much, he gets up, he drinks coffee, he goes out, he finds his target, he kills that person, then he moves on to the next one. And then that's how I felt this guy was. He was just... he had a singular purpose in life. And I just picture if they followed him around, he goes to his one apartment, he, you know, makes a cup of coffee, he turns on the TV, he looks at his phone, he gets a name, and he goes, right, puts the gun in his pocket, and then quietly leaves the apartment and just leaves the building in an unassuming manner and finds the person and goes, are you James whatever? Yeah. And then he just shoots the guy and then leaves. Quietly drags the body into the alley and moves on.
Be a cool scene if he was watching a show and he just hit pause, went out and did that, and came back and just hit pause again.
He hits unpause and it's 30 Rock, yeah. And he's like, oh, this show is hilarious.
Like, laughs at some Kenneth joke.
I love Tracy Jordan. He's hilarious. Ha ha ha.
That's a good one.
Woo.
Yay.
What you got, Chris?
Misty Knight.
Yes.
Yeah.
Can't argue with that.
Yeah,
two things I really like about her. Hey.
Yeah, that's really one of the reasons why I picked. Well, she did the actor playing her does a really good job, and
she's
so pretty.
Mm-hmm. The I'm such a creep. There's a girl in one of the episodes who I think just goes by the name of Blue, even though she has green hair. She's like talking to Luke Cage at one point when he's walking down the street.
Right.
And I was like, oh my god, who is that? And I like had to pause the episode and then like look on IMDb, find the episode, scroll to the actors, find
her. Oh, that's what I do too.
Look her up, look at the commercials she's been in. I'm just like, oh god, she's so cute. And I'm like, what am I doing? Stop being a creep.
Yeah, I do it too.
Yeah. It's just like, oh, that
not
girl.
It's
like,
being a creep. It's not like you're going to call her or anything.
We'll see, man. I don't know.
I don't act upon any of mine. I just gaze.
Like, oh, she's from Chicago. I'm just going to change my Tinder distance to 5,000 miles and then start seeing what happens.
I loved you in Luke Cage. What are you doing later? I'm outside your apartment.
Right.
Oh, boy. But no, actually, the scene in the car where she gets into it with her partner, when she basically gets him to confess that he's been involved in some nefarious dealings,
Oh, yeah. He's working.
Yeah. When she kind of puts the hammer down on him and says, uh-huh. you know, cuff yourself, I'm like, oh, you just done fuck with Friday Foster, son. What?
Yeah, she was great. I loved how like dedicated she was to him too, to her partner before she found out what he'd been up to.
And she's such a sexy mama.
Like, it's just, it's cool that she has that. I mean, it's something in real life that we don't necessarily love when cops are completely dedicated to the, you know, their partners and stuff, regardless of the truth. But it was cool to see that, like, that moment too, that she really had a, like, she really cared for that guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, Misty Knight, that's great. I guess in the comics, she's got like a cybernetic arm that Tony Stark made or something.
I like it.
Well, she's really Iron Fist's girlfriend.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I read that too. Because I wanted to know more about her after I watched a couple episodes. So I went to the Marvel Wiki and I was like, oh, wow. Because they always, you know, they love to like hint at like the canon, but it's totally different. So.
Well, yeah, my only exposure to Power Man, and actually I got exposed to him back in grade school. And I'm embarrassed to say the comic, but whatever, I don't care. It was an issue of Dazzler.
I remember Dazzler.
So you know who she is, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dazzler and Longshot, man.
She's pretty much a 70s fucking porn star on roller skates.
Yeah, it's like Roller Girl from Boogie Nights.
Yeah. So,
with the same powers.
And one of the issues that I had when I was a kid, I had the one where... It's Power Man. It's like a Power Man Iron Fist crossover with her because they're both on the cover. I remember the cover clear as day, what it looked like. So that's how, like, when I was watching Luke Cage and I saw his outfit, you know, as he escaped prison, I was like, dude, that's fucking awesome because I remember that issue that I had and that's exactly how he looked. It's like that kicks ass. But, like I said, yeah, Misty Knight. Mm.
Yeah, she's pretty wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. Yeah.
I mean, she could have her own show. These little one shot ideas that I thought would be really cool. Like, be good to have one for Claire. It'd be great to have one for Misty Knight. Like, I could watch this stuff all day.
Yeah, I like that. She is pretty wonderful. I'll agree with you on that one. She is pretty wonderful.
Well, my pick is someone who's not wonderful. My pick is Turk. Turk from Daredevil and Luke Cage. Possibly Jessica Jones. I can't even remember. He is the guy in the first episode of Daredevil who's doing, like, the human trafficking and gets beat up by Daredevil and then gets progressively beat up throughout the season. Like, he kind of moves into just selling guns. And then later, in Luke Cage, he plays chess at Pop Shop.
Right.
He's just, like, he's, like, a low-level bad guy who just comes kind of... Like, he started off as, like, pretty despicable, like, human trafficking. But they clearly noticed that this guy had, like, more of a... Had kind of, like, a... sort of sad sack failure kind of comedy vibe to him, I think, and they're starting to write him in this way that I think is really, really funny. And it's like kind of the, like, when they well, I don't know, you haven't finished Luke Cage, but what sort of happens to him at the end of Luke Cage is super funny, and I think it's just, he's going to be one of these kind of comic foils, sort of these Marvel Street things for a while. He's not a big deal, he's not great. I mean, everyone we've been talking about has been really fantastic, like big level people. This is just a small character, and he's, you know, he does a couple of real scummy things in Luke Cage. He does scummy things, everything, because he's a total criminal, and that's just what he is. He's just a criminal, and but he's one of those people who clearly is like, life is just constantly kicking the shit out of him, and he's never learning his lesson. It's like, he's like Wile E. Coyote, kind of. And I find something sort of kind of sweet about that he's just constantly getting the shit kicked out of him, and he's always just like, God damn it, this sucks.
He's like the old Gil of Luke Cage.
Yeah. So I feel like they're going to probably keep using this guy, and they'll probably keep using him in these shows, and I'm hoping this is just something that happens to him throughout the whole episodes. He's like, if you ever watch Avatar, he's like the cabbage guy, you know? Okay. Do you guys ever watch Avatar, the cartoon?
Oh, I was thinking of the movie. I'm like, cabbage guy.
Oh, no. Okay.
About the last Airbender?
The Last Airbender, yeah. The Last Airbender.
That's the worst name, too, to give.
It is a bad name. There's no part of
that. Because
whenever
I think
title.
The Last Airbender, I just start thinking of farts.
Of course, as you should. that's what everyone thought.
I'm like Airbender. I'm like, dude. I'm like, oh. Okay.
Anyway, there's a character on there. They just call Cabbage Guy, because he never really had a name. And he was just he was like that sad sack character who just everything kept like kind of falling to shit for throughout the whole season. So he was always, it's always funny to see him, but yeah. So Turk is kind of, he's just that guy. He just all his decisions are terrible. Everything goes wrong for him. He's always getting beat up, but he's never really getting killed. He never does anything super bad except, you know, obviously the first episode, Daredevil, the human trafficking thing. You can't get too much worse than that. But it seems like as he's getting beat up, his crimes are getting less and less serious. Like as the show's going to go on later, he's just going to be like habitual jaywalker. That's all he's gonna...
He'll be running the marble game outside of some like convenience store, like with the cup and ball thing.
Yeah, he's one of those, and I think I like him. I like the way he kind of tied in the universes a little bit. He's just, there was no real reason for him, but he's. Because of who he is and because of how he sort of reacts to stress, which is a little bit of that, like, he can't quite believe it's happening to him again kind of attitude. like he clearly thinks
life
that, like, something's going wrong, but he hasn't quite figured out that it's just his decision-making that keeps putting him in these situations. But yeah, like, the little thing that happens in the end that Luke Cage is great.
So I
picked Turk because he's, I think he's going to become, like, a funny, fun character. So... there you go.
Into it. I like that one.
All right, so there is our over-under. If you guys have any out there, feel free to tweet us, any of us, post it on our Facebook, something. Just get in touch if you agree or disagree. Boom. Now we'll wrap this up with our best things ever and get out of your hair for the week. But this one, for me, my best thing ever, think out of all of us here, Damien will probably appreciate it the most because I was super bored last night and found a documentary on Amazon called Fuzz, The Sound That Changed the World. And it was an entire 90-minute documentary on effects pedals.
Oh my gosh, that sounds fantastic.
It was, by the end of it, I'm like, dude, why aren't I making my own pedals? Like, what am I doing? It was pretty interesting. And they interviewed a lot of, I don't want to say small time, but a lot of, like, indie pedal creators and how they like clone all these different, you know, pedals. And then, you know, they interview some, you know, artists, like they interviewed the guy from Wolfmother. They interviewed Steve Albini, and it's just cutting away to all these different effects pedals and how they clone them and how one guy made the pedal. And it was used on Songs for the Deaf. And then in the middle of recording, the pedal went out. So they called the guy to get a replacement. And he's like, yeah, he's like, FYI, like, that transistor that blew, like, you're going to replace that, and it's going to sound different anyway. I've made a million of these pedals. They all sound different. And they're like, dude, we just recorded, like, 80% of the album with that sound. Like, we, you know, it's just really interesting. This, I don't know how the, I just want to make pedals now. Like, I'm starting think, like, dude, Jeff is an electrical engineer. He could probably do this, and I'll test him out and be like, dude, this sounds awesome. Let's ship it to some people and see if they like it so that we can make some money.
That's awesome. You should do it.
I should, but I mean, I probably won't because Jeff's really not into that kind of stuff, so he might not. But it was super interesting, and I was like, made me kind of want, like, there's this, I forget the company, but like, they literally are building pedals. These two dudes are making them in their practice space they share with, like, 8 other bands. And when they're not practicing, they're just in there soldering up all these pedals. And they're, like, they're so backlogged. And I'm like, dude, that would be a great job.
Yeah. My buddy Ben Verellen, he makes amps and pedals. And that's all he does. Like, he just got his band's on tour with the Melvins right now.
Nice.
But, yeah, that's a good gig. But he just makes his own amps. And
I like
they're
to
awesome.
Hang out with fucking King Buzzo.
Yeah, dude, that guy rules. I got to play with Melvins a couple times. They're always really fun to watch live.
Does he still have crazy hair?
It's crazy and gray now.
Sweet.
Yeah, he looks great. Yeah, great band live. I don't really own many of the records, but they're definitely one to see live.
Oh, what's the one? Oh, Houdini.
Yeah, record's great.
It's the one everyone has.
Yeah, that one and Stoner Witch. I think Stoner Witch is my favorite, though. That was great. Anyway, so.
Yeah, so that was mine. Brian.
Nice.
Last week, I don't know if it's still going on or not, but Hulu is now, if you sign up for 1 year, it's $6 a month instead of $8. So I signed up for Hulu.
Nice.
The only thing that I'm very upset about is Blast of Silence is not on there. Of all the Criterion movies.
I know. They don't have all of them anymore.
That
Ghost of Silence?
That upsets me a little bit because I was like, I'm going to watch that right away. And then I typed it in and I'm like, wait a minute, it's not here. But then I started going through the list and I'm like, nope, nope, nope.
I talked to my friend who works for Criterion. He's the guy who told you sending all that stuff to me. Sadly, he didn't send me that movie or I'd send it out to you. And he doesn't work there anymore. But he told me that they're probably going to start having fewer and fewer movies on Hulu, actually. I think Criterion's actually setting up a streaming thing themselves. And that's... So they're going to start doing that, which is going to be... It's kind of a bummer for Hulu, but... Probably not supposed to mention that on a podcast, but whatever.
That is like 70% of why I signed up for Hulu.
Yeah. I know. I don't have cable anymore, so I don't watch regular TV at all unless it's like on Hulu now. So it usually means I'm often behind. Although things like Gotham and stuff, they play the new episodes and they come out, so... You know, I've been checking that out.
I'm gonna have to get by with Son of Zorn, I guess.
Sweet, Christopher, yeah. Are you still playing games or are you?
No, I'm right here, dude.
Okay, do you have something?
Yeah, dude, Gears of War 4 comes out in like about 2 hours.
Oh, nice. Are you like downloading it at midnight?
No, I'm picking it up tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, still cool. I like it.
I could have went at midnight, but I'm not. Nah.
What's the point? You're just going to come home and go to bed, right?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Plus, I'm not going to stand there with all those other fucking dumb nerds.
You don't want to just show your true nerddom?
Dude, I went there one time, I think, to go get Assassin's Creed Unity, which is a fucking wet fart of a game to begin with. But, like, standing in line, wearing their fucking Assassin's Creed shirts, I'm like, you guys are fucking tools.
Oh, was anyone dressed in, like, a full costume?
No, because this is South Elgin, so
I don't know what that means, but I like that.
It's just
that
a suburb outside Chicago. No one gives a fuck. But no,
people wear costumes for pretty much any reason they can out here.
Oh, I know. I know, but no, I didn't see anyone wearing a costume. You know what? Now that I did I that day, I think someone might have been dressed up like fucking one of the character from Assassin's Creed. Maybe, I don't know. But I'm not going tonight. And, like, GameStop even called me. They're like, yeah, if you get here at 11, you know, you get your ticket, you get your game faster, and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, dude, I'm like, I'm cool, thanks. I'll pick it up Friday or Saturday when there's no one there. So.
Yeah, the only game I ever picked up at midnight was Star Wars Battlefront. And, yeah, waiting in line for that was absolutely painful. Not to mention GameStop was just the most unorganized bullshit I've ever dealt with my life, so yeah I'm not gonna bother anymore with the midnights.
Yeah, I did one and that's good enough. I'm cool, I'm straight.
Sweet. All right, Damien, how about you?
I love going to therapy. I'm totally winning therapy. I'm having the best time.
I like it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bummer, but I'm so glad I'm doing it. I should have done it years ago. I'm glad that my insurance covers mental health. So I'm just paying like a $20 copay each time I go.
Yeah, I mean,
my therapist is cool. Like, it's great. I recommend everyone, if you can go, because it's awesome. So helpful.
I've said that for a long time. I feel most people could benefit from just talking to somebody that you know, like a third party, basically, and just someone who's trained to help with probably everybody could benefit from it. I don't care who you are.
Well, as someone who's done it several times, two things about it. A, it's kind of a good thing to just kind of go and unload on somebody that has no emotional attachment to you, because that's pretty much what they're there for. They're just kind of there to absorb all of your thoughts and so on. But secondly, and it's something that didn't really dawn on me until one time when I went, sometimes it takes somebody who's outside of your circle of people to point out the flaw in your to point out what's the root of your problem, kind of. Because I was there for a reason, and I was explaining to the woman what was going on, and she's like, well, okay. Spoiler alert, it was about a woman. And she said, okay, she lies to her kids, she lies to her friends, she lies to her family, she lies to these people, she lies to these people, she lies to these people. What's stopping her from lying to you? And I went, oh, I'm such an idiot. Oh, my God. 9 months for that. I'm like, okay. Good point. I'm like, I'm a moron. I think I'm going to go to McDonald's now and drown my sorrows in a Big Mac. But it was like such a simple thing for her to point
that
out.
It's weird that it's nice to have someone, you know, it's great to have someone like that. And I'm really happy and lucky that I am. I mean, it just seems like it's something that would be helpful to everyone. So if anyone feels like they should do it or kind of want to do it, absolutely should do it. And, you know, also health insurance should probably cover that in dental. And I would be in a much better place.
Yeah, I mean, I don't go now, but I mean, it's not. I've gone enough to where it's like, I don't understand why there's a stigma to it, because it's not a bad thing. It's really not.
Yeah, it's great. Like I said, I'm totally winning therapy.
Yeah, a lot of people kind of come down on it, saying it's junk science or whatever. I don't buy that for a second, because it's not a science. It's just a place where, like, you know, sometimes your things overwhelm the people you are with all the time. So it's good to go where you can just let it all go, and that somebody is there for that reason. So
exactly. One last thing too. I also discovered a band today called Buñuel, I think. Like the director Louis Buñuel or whatever. I can't say his name. Pronounce his name. But it is a band that I had never heard of, because I posted that thing to you on Facebook where I said name your two favorite bands this year, records that came out this year. Just I like doing stuff like that occasionally, just see what people are listening to, and I always get a ton of cool suggestions. But that band. I've actually worked with a singer before, this guy Eugene Robinson. He's in the band called Oxbow. They are awesome. I really like this band. It's like some super group of dudes, I think from Italy maybe, and this guy Eugene singing. And I kind of described it to someone today as, like, before I knew Eugene was actually the singer, because I listened to it, I go, oh, it sounds like Eugene Robinson is singing for like some sort of like 90s version of Scratch Acid meets like maybe early Nine Inch Nails in a way, but not at all. Like, as terrible as that might sound, like, it's really good and weird and different, and the guitars are crazy, and the bass sounds awesome. Like, the bass is super heavy and thick, and the drums are just kind of has that little like shellacky kind of like drum and bass kind of heaviness to it, mm-hmm. with like a noisy guitar, but produced in a not like that Albini sort of bare bones production, which I really love. It's just a totally different kind of production. It's really kind of slick in the little 90s, like I was saying, like, and I discovered it today, and I passed it on to a couple people that I knew would really dig it, and it's really, really stoked on it. I've only listened to the record one time through, but it's on Spotify, and I'm going to listen to it many more times. And it's spelled, if anyone cares, Buñuel, I believe.
You know, it's funny, when I got home, I saw that, I looked up the band, and all I found were clips from Belle du Jour.
Oh.
So I was like, okay, I think I looked this up incorrectly. So I don't know. Try again later, I guess.
Yeah, B-U-N with the little tilde, little N-E-A or whatever. B-U-N-U-E-L. And it doesn't seem like a very popular band, because on Spotify they have 163 monthly use listeners.
Wow.
But I'm super into this. And yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if I'd never heard of it. It seems really weird that I would have never heard of this, but I was two of my friends who have very similar taste in music to me were like, oh, that record's my favorite of the year. So I had to check it out, and I'm very glad I did. Second song is called Jesus with a Cock. So
I'm assuming based upon his presumed anatomy, he had one of those. So
I believe so.
That would be an accurate song title.
Yeah. Do you guys know who Eugene Robinson is?
I'm aware of Oxbow, but I don't think I've ever listened to him.
Big guy. Big, amazing, beautiful black man with swastika tattoos.
What?
He often ends up naked when he's playing. He's older. He's an MMA fighter, too. He wrote a book called Fight, How to Get Your Ass Kicked Without Ask... Or Everything You Wanted to Know About Kicking Ass But Thought You'd Get Your Ass Kicked for Asking, or something. It's got a weird title. But he wrote a book about fighting and like what you should do in fights and how to fight, how to take a punch and stuff. But he's this writer, singer, dude. He's just totally out there. His singing style is really strange, especially in Oxbow, but it's great. There's that band is super good live too. Definitely in that sort of shellacky noise rock kind of thing. But from San Francisco, and he's just awesome. And we've done my band has played like incidental background music while he's done book readings a couple times in Seattle. Like, he'll come up here and we'll go to a club and me and Shane and Phil will just kind of start playing almost like jazz, like real quiet, kind of down-tuned stuff. Mm-hmm. And Eugene will kind of come up and sit at the table with like a cigar and like a cup of coffee and just start reading from his book to people. And people, like a bunch of people come to watch it. It's really crazy.
That sounds awesome.
Super fun. Yeah.
I feel like I need that kind of super fun in my life.
See, hearing all that stuff just makes me miss playing music, but then I wouldn't even know who to talk to anymore.
Yeah. This makes me implicit, too, because Shane's arm is still super broken.
So, wait, he didn't heal in 2 weeks?
He did not, no. Apparently.
Oh, it's been...
Which, again, it's bullshit. Medical science is crap.
So, let me guess, you don't play in a band with Secret Luke Cage?
I do not.
Why even bother at this point?
My musical endeavors ended way longer than a couple weeks ago, though.
Awesome.
I have ideas in my head. I just am lazy lately. When I first bought this guitar, I played it like every single day. Now it's like down to once a week, and it sucks because I used to have all my pedals and stuff up here by the computer, so I could plug them into the mixer and just record goofy stuff whenever I wanted to. And I moved like my old mixer downstairs now, and I put a little laptop down there, but I can't get that to record. So now I'm like, damn it, I don't want to bring everything back upstairs.
That's really great. My daughter just made something called the wagon out of stick.
I heard her say that she presented you with something.
Oh, see, she's about to lose a couple more teeth.
Oh, nice.
And she keeps wiggling them, and it's kind of gross.
Well, I guess speaking of kind of gross, let's wrap the show up here for today.
All right.
As always, you can find me on Twitter at XOrsonX. You can find Brian at Pure Rock Fury. Chris has actually left us already, but you can find him at SkateXEdge. And you can find Damien at Damien Johnston. Don't forget to head to Facebook.com/ReviewAndRoast or ComicRoast.com for all the other fun stuff. Until next time, we'll see you next week.